So the question was asked. But this time the question wasn't asked, so I'm asking it for you. And really, on this question, we're going to deal with the problem that people aren't asking the question. And what are we talking about? We're talking about the question of how do you decide what the halacha is? So I noticed that the most common way to decide what the halacha is to hear what your friend says over that he heard from his friend, that when he was a little kid he heard from his teacher, and from that you could infer what the halacha would be in this case. The next most common thing is to hear from a friend who actually heard from a rabbi what the rabbi said. But the least common, unfortunately, is that people actually go up to the rabbi and ask him what the halacha is. So I want us to take a few minutes to review how we're supposed to find out what the halacha is. Now, in truth, we have a few classes on the web describing the halachic process and how we arrive at the halacha. And ideally, a person is supposed to learn until he himself can give halachic ruling and can learn from the text, from the sources, from the Gemara, from the Rishonim, from the Shulchan Aruch and the Achronim, and come up with what the halacha is. But we're not yet there. So we discussed that there are shortcuts that we take, and they're shortcuts with the limitations of shortcuts. So we learn these farm like Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and Chai Adam, and that gives us a basic picture of what we're supposed to do. And that's fine, because we don't have much of a choice. That's why these books were compiled. So on a question like, what bracha do I make on a cracker? So if you've learned Kitzur Shulchan Aruch or Chai Adam, you know it's a mezonos. You could also go by what everyone around you is doing, and they're making a mezonos. What happens when they take out cornflakes for breakfast? So then everyone starts saying, I heard it's Adama, I heard it's a Shahako. So you see, it's not clear what the bracha is on cornflakes. So go ask your rabbi and he'll tell you that it depends on how the cornflakes are made. Sometimes cornflakes are made by taking a corn and squashing it. The machine dries it and squashes it with force and pressure. And you have each cornflake is really a corn kernel that's been squashed, and then it's Adama. And sometimes the cornflakes are made of maize, where they take corn and they make it into flour, and then they put it back together again with water, and that's how they make cornflakes. And different brands make cornflakes in different ways. And that, when it's made that way, so then it would be a shahako. So if you ask someone, you'll know the halacha. If you open up Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it won't say what the halacha is. You have to know the matzis. You have to know what's going on around, how the cornflakes are made. You ask a rabbi, what bracha you make on peanut juice? So I was in yeshiva, and they asked peanut juice. They asked a rabbi, what bracha do you make on a wafer? So the rabbi said, what's a wafer? So they started describing a wafer to him, and he said, well, according to your description, it's a shahako. And then a short while later, he saw a wafer. So he saw a person making a shahako on a wafer. So he said, how could you make a shahako on that? So the guy said, well, you said it's a shahako. So he said, I never said about something like that it was a shahako. The way it was described to me, I said it was a shahako. But now that I see what a wafer is, it's a mezonos. So when we ask a rabbi a question, we should bring a specimen. When they asked Rabbi Feinstein what the blessing on a peanut chew was, so he gave one ruling. And then they brought before him a peanut chew, and he gave a different ruling. Is a peanut chew Goldberg's peanut chews or nutty chews? Is it a adam or a shahako? What's the primary part of the peanut chew? You have those little candy bars that have coconut around them, and they're red on the outside and white on the inside. So I always thought they were Bor Priya Eitz, because it seems like the primary ingredient over there are pieces of coconut. But if you verify a little bit more, you find out that it looks like the primary ingredient is coconut. The primary ingredient is sugar and corn syrup. It looks like the main thing is coconut. And that's why Shlomo Zalman said it's a shahako. So we have to know the halachos. We learn as much as we can from the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and the Chai Adam or whatever other book you have that will summarize halachos for you. And we have to know that many questions, the answers to those questions lies in a knowledge that's beyond the Sfarim. It's a knowledge of the facts, and it's a knowledge of more halacha than the Sfarim can offer, and that's why we have to ask a rabbi. Why is this so relevant? The reason I'm bringing it up is because it's come to my attention that people are making decisions about questions that are life-altering and have great pertinence in halacha, and halacha has great pertinence on those decisions, and they don't bother asking the question. Now, let's take simple examples. If someone were to ask you, am I allowed to cross the street? So you'd say, are you okay? Okay. What's wrong with you? What kind of question is that? Everyone crosses the street. On the other hand, if someone would say, am I allowed to take a flight to the moon? We don't know on the moon how you're supposed to keep Shabbos and Yom Tov. We don't know, because the Torah was given and the Torah taught us how to keep the Torah on earth. And when one leaves earth, so then if we were in the generation of the Tanaim, maybe we could derive from the Torah what the law would be. When does the day begin and when does the day end, when you don't have a sunrise and sunset? But being that we're not in that generation and we don't know how to derive these new concepts from the Torah, and we don't have a tradition on it, and we can't figure it out, so it's a pretty big question. Can you go to the moon? It's problematic. We don't know when you'll keep Shabbos, when the morning is, when the night is. So certain questions, everyone sees that they're questions. And certain questions, everyone assumes they aren't questions. And the problem is that there are many things that fall into that area of the assumption, this isn't a question. I'll give you an example. People will say, is there any halachic opinion about whether a person should prefer going by car or by bus? And the truth is that there can be, because the risk by going by car, especially in this country where the number of casualties from car accidents is so high, I don't remember a week when I wasn't. I don't have a car. I don't drive. I drove in the United States. I don't drive in Israel. I don't have a license here. And when I do get to go in with a ride or with a taxi, so I'd say one out of every five such rides ends up either in an accident or almost an accident. I don't know if you guys know how many almost accidents there are in this country. People like, it just now I came from an almost accident. We were like this close to the car next to us. That's no exaggeration. The driver was busy talking. And, oh, okay, he slammed on the brakes. He made it. He's lucky. I'm lucky too. But a bus is much safer. On the other hand, there were times when there were bombings on buses. People think I can go and choose where I'm going to live, and I don't have to ask the question whether it's safe or unsafe to go and live in all kinds of yishuvim nitnachluyot. So a person can say, well, I see my rabbis doing it. But in our generation, the halacha is that you cannot look at a rabbi and say, because he's doing something, I can assume it's okay. There's no such thing as a rabbi that's on the level that he can perfect every action that he does so that no one can misunderstand it. The earlier generations, the rabbis were on such a level where they could be so exacting in everything they did that they could ensure that no one would misunderstand the single action they did. But today, we're not on that level. And just because you see your rabbi doing it, so ask him. Maybe he has a reason to do it. You'll see many rabbis who don't make aliyah, and people will say, why do I have to make aliyah? My rabbi's here in Chutz Arts. Well, maybe your rabbi has a different reason why he has to be in Chutz Arts. Like the fact that he has to guide the congregation, does that mean that you don't have to go to Israel? So that's one example. But when we're contemplating questions, and especially questions that pertain to risking our lives, so I think the correct approach is to ask the question. Now, the rabbi you ask the question to might answer you, of course, it's not a problem, go ahead. Or, of course, it is a problem, don't go. But the question should be asked. We can't approach these things and say there's no question. And what's bothersome to me is that people will sometimes decide on these questions. There was a time that there were bombs falling, I don't remember where. I don't remember. It wasn't Sderot. Wasn't Sderot. No, this goes back a year. Maybe it was Sderot. Maybe it was Sderot. I don't remember. And no one said you should go. All the rabbis were pretty clear. No, it was in the north. It was when bombs were falling in the north. So people... What? Maybe it was Mitzrayim. Yeah. So people said, I love Israel, I'm going to go to the north. So I said, are you going to make sure there's a bunker where you're going? Are you going to go? I mean, what are you talking about? I love Israel. I'm going to the north. I need a bunker. So I said, look, call me when you get back. I want to hear that you made it back safely. People don't think to ask the question, and I don't understand it. We know that we'd forgo many mitzvos almost all mitzvos for the sake of our lives. So the Torah gives great value to our lives, and the Torah teaches us that we have to give great value to our lives. So if we're going to do an action that involves risking our lives, we have to ask the question. A person is going to go to the army. So you'll say, we need an army, we need to protect the country. Right. And there are halachas that pertain to going to the army. Who should go? When should a person go? And a person should ask the question. It's known that Rav Dov Lior wanted to go to the army, and he came to Rav Tzvi Yehuda, and Rav Tzvi Yehuda said, don't go, you're learning in yeshiva. Now Rav Tzvi Yehuda used to spend much of his speeches speaking about how holy the army is, how important the army is. And in the yeshiva there was constant discussion how holy the army is. But when his students wanted to go to the army, he said, you're learning Torah, that's far more important for the country. So Rav Dov Lior didn't listen to Rav Tzvi Yehuda, and he went to the army. And after a month in the army, he realized that his Rebbe was right. So he found a way out, and he got back to the yeshiva. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda used to say about Rav Dov Lior kulo kodesh chutz michodesh. Dov Lior is all holiness but that month. He lost out that month. That month, that's a month that he lost. Kulo kodesh chutz michodesh. That's what he used to say about him. We have to recognize when we're faced with questions, and we shouldn't be embarrassed to ask. And we can't decide what the halacha is because we happen to read an alon on the parsha where someone wrote an article. And even if that person is a great rabbi, you want to know his opinion in halacha, call him and ask him. We don't decide halachos based upon reading articles. Halacha, and especially halacha that pertains to our lives, we have to ask the question. Now, whoever you feel is enough of an authority to answer such a question, so ask. I'm not saying who you should ask. I'm just saying ask. It can't be that people are making tremendous decisions and they're not asking the questions. So, to summarize what we said, we discussed that a person has to verify what the halacha is, that we use these kitzur svarim, like the kitzur shulchan aruch, to get a basic picture of halacha. Certain halachas, we won't be able to know the halacha based upon those svarim because we have to verify what the facts are. For example, how do you make cornflakes, as we discussed? How do you make these candy bars? How do you make the bars with cocos, with coconut, etc.? We said that there are questions where no one has to ask. You see what everyone does. There are questions where everyone knows you have to ask. And then there are the questions that fall in between, and it's better to err on the side of caution. And we said that when we want to verify halacha, it's not enough to hear what our friends say that they heard from the rabbi. And we have to verify the halacha, not just read an article and think that from there we can conclude what the halacha is. I want to take this one step further. Sometimes people will say, well, my friend asked the rabbi, and the rabbi told him it's okay. My friend asked his rabbi if he could go to Chutz Laaretz. The rabbi said it's okay, so I could also go to Chutz Laaretz. Maybe your friend had a job to do in Chutz Laaretz. Maybe your friend wasn't a Kohen. There are many angles to each question. And when a rabbi is answering a question, he's answering an individual. And he's giving that individual the answer. And if we hear a quote that Rabbi so-and-so gave halachic ruling to so-and-so in a certain circumstance, he gave the following halachic ruling, we cannot infer from that what the halachic ruling would be for others. There's a rule in halacha that when we give halachic ruling to an individual, then that's his personal psak. And his next door neighbor cannot take that psak. And when a rabbi publishes responsa for everyone, then he's publishing responsa for everyone. But when he's speaking to an individual, that ruling is only true for the individual. This error comes up very frequently when it comes to birth control. Birth control isn't something that's easily permitted. And different forms of birth control have different weights of leniency. Rabbi Feinstein writes, any time a couple came to him for to allow them to use birth control, so he'd take the couple in and he'd talk to them and he'd interview them and he'd speak to them and find out what the reasoning was. And after a long conversation, he'd explain to them how difficult it is to be lenient and to permit it for them. And because of their difficult circumstance, he will permit them this form of birth control for the next 3 months, and 3 months they have to come back to them and they'll talk again. Along came a person who decided to be a wise aleck, and he published a calendar, and in the calendar he wrote that Rabbi Feinstein permits this kind of birth control, and that kind of birth control, and third kind of birth control. So Rabbi Feinstein writes him a letter, which is written in his response. He says, how could you do such a thing? I never permitted it. I will only permit it for a couple that's in specific circumstances, after I interview the couple, and even then I only permit it to, for a certain number of months, and then I tell him you have to come back to me, and we'll reanalyze if the situation permits us to apply this leniency. But this is an issue where one woman speaks to her friend, yeah, my rabbi said this is okay, it's not a problem. And the next woman hears it, and then it goes on and on, and everyone knows it. So I want to bring one more example. Danielle, are you here? Good. Danielle asked me, he's been asking for a long time, for a class on Shadim.
On what?
Shadim, demons. So I'm not yet ready, but I've been working on it.
Can we talk about the chicken, the cat, the black cat
roasting? Oh, we'll get to that too, maybe. But it's interesting that everyone seems to quote that the Rambam holds that there are no Shadim. Very interesting, right? People quote that, which is a problematic quote because the Gemara discusses Shadim and the Halacha discusses Shadim. So I was working on it today, and it's interesting to see that there are places where the Halacha takes into account Shadim. There are places where the Halacha, there are places in Archaim, there are places in Yerdea, there are places in Ebenezer. Shows up and it has halachic implications. There are times that we say a person shouldn't let blood because the constellations, it could harm him. There are times that we say a person shouldn't walk alone. For example, a chassan, we're careful, we don't let a chassan walk alone. One of the reasons is out of honor to the chassan, and one of the reasons is because we say that demons are jealous of him. He's entering such a holy state, he's getting all his sins forgiven, so chassan and kal, we don't let them go alone. We say that there are bad things waiting out there spiritually to harm them. Yeah? Brought in the Gemara. Shlosha Satan mitgare b'em, the Gemara says. So there are many halachos where we do bring the Gemara and halacha discusses shadim. And in some of those places, the Rambam makes no mention of the shadim. So the Beis Yosef and the Magid Mishnah and the Rashba and others. Question, Rambam, how'd you leave this point out? And they don't answer. Meaning the Shulchan Aruch didn't say, well, the Rambam just doesn't believe in Shadim. That's the answer. That's why I didn't deal with it. Shulchan Aruch says, I don't understand the Rambam. How'd he leave this point out? The Rashba says, I don't understand the Rambam. How'd he leave this point out? The Magid Mishnah says, I don't understand the Rambam. How'd he leave this point out? The Mishnah Lamech, the same thing, as did many, many others. A few generations ago, we had Rav Natanzon, the Shol Umeshev, the Rebbe of the Chassam Sofer, and he writes in his response, he says, and bottom line, after everyone asked these questions, and he's lived a few hundred years after all these Rishonim, bottom line is we have to say the truth. The Rambam held there were no Shadim, and that affected the Rambam's ruling in this instance, and that's why the Rambam makes no mention of it. Notice, Shulchan Aruch didn't say it. The Rashba didn't say it. We gave a long list of people who didn't say it. But Rav Natanzon, the Shaul Umeshev, said it, and this is what people know to quote. This is what people quote. So the fact that people quote something doesn't mean that it's the most legitimate opinion. It could mean that it's the opinion that got accepted, that people like, that people find it comfortable to quote. We have to be careful when we assume that something that's quoted is necessarily true. I'm not saying it isn't true or it is true. I'm just saying that's an example of something that everyone's quoting. And the truth is that it doesn't seem that the greatest Rishonim, Achronim, seem to agree with that understanding of the Rambam. So, in summation, when we're coming to decide what the halacha is, we have to ask and we have to verify. And we can't rely on what our friend says he heard from the rabbi. And even if our friend, it's our roommate, and he asked the rabbi. There are very few exceptions. I'll give one more example. A guy comes to the rabbi with his shaver. And he asks the rabbi, is this shaver okay? And the rabbi checks the shaver and he says, that shaver is a kosher shaver. You can use that shaver. So he comes back and he tells his friend, my rabbi said that Philips, this brand, is a kosher shaver. Is that what his rabbi said? No, it's not what his rabbi said. His rabbi looked at that specific shaver and told him it's okay. And I can tell you that Rabbi Feinstein, for example, says that you can't go by any brand. Every single shaver has to be checked. There's no such thing as a brand of shavers that's good, because the shavers are produced differently. Even though we have mass production today, there's still a difference, which the rabbis have found, between one kind of blade and another kind of blade in the same brand produced in the same place. And that's why one That's an example of where a person comes back and he thinks he can quote. You can't quote. Do you want to verify what the halach is? Call up and verify what the halach is. If your rabbi tells you that on a potato chips, if it's Pringles that has crisps, you make a shahako. And if it's a potato chip where it's sliced, again, potato chips is the same thing like corn,
cornflakes.
That there are two ways of making potato chips. One way of making potato chips is they grind up the potato and then they make it, they put it back together again and they make potato chips out of that. Some opinions say that'll be shahako. Some opinions say that's a bor pri adama. And then another way of making potato chips is you slice the potatoes real thin and you dry them. And then everyone agrees it's a bor pri adama. So if your rabbi tells you that Pringles is shahako, so then you know Pringles is shahako. That you could quote to your friend. That's an example of Allah, which is not individual based. So we have to be very careful before we quote halachos. We have to be careful before we accept quotes of halachos. And when in doubt, ask.
Are there any razors?
Yeah. Electric shavers have to be checked. There are many electric shavers that are not good. In a second, we'll get that if you want.
Okay.
Any other question about this? Okay. So we'll go on to that.